Welcome to The Good Stuff with Sonoma County Wine Growers. I'm Virginie Boone alongside Carissa Cruz, President and CEO of The Wine Growers. Here to talk about what makes Sonoma County such a special place to grow, make, and enjoy wine.
I love and, it because you can't speak because you have your mouth full of licorice.
I'm like, he started the music before I was expecting, and I was trying to catch up, and I didn't.
Even Jeff is giggling over there.
I didn't.
You heard that, right? The mumbled, that was just called That was called licorice.
I tried. You could just hear there's too much saliva in her mouth right now.
There's a lot of licorice. So,
My bad.
Apologies. That music happened faster than I expected.
That's all right.
So, hey, welcome.
Hey. We're into the new year.
I know.
It's good to giggle.
We're loopy.
And loopy.
Loopy already.
You survived the holidays, so that's all good. And we're eating licorice in studio instead of gummy bears today.
Well, we have an assortment. And licorice has not been a hit, so it looks like I'm on the hook to consume it all throughout the show.
I'll help you because I like it too. We'll leave the chewy sticks for Jeff. That's all fine.
Now we know.
Oh my gosh. Okay. So much going on already in the new year.
Off
to a fast and furious start.
Okay, tell us. Yeah, tell us everything.
So we are literally today, we, Sonoma County Wine Growers, my gosh, I have saliva too from all the licorice.
We should wait till
the
break.
I myself like I'm going to spit on myself here. Anyway. Pull myself together. We, Sonoma County Wine Growers, in our partnership with the Coachella Valley Firebirds, we are actually the partner and presenting sponsor for the Cactus Cup.
Oh, I
down
remember.
Down in Palm Springs, Coachella Valley. So this is a college hockey tournament. But what's super great about that... I'm done eating the licorice, I think, for the rest of the show.
Yeah.
But what's super great about all of that is that because we are the presenting sponsor, we actually have TV ads.
So cool.
Like, the brand is on the trophy. We're throwing out Sonoma County Wine Grower beanies to the fans, because who doesn't want a wine grower beanie when you're sitting in a hockey arena?
Do you have a beanie gun?
Do you know what they do? We do not. I have not been empowered with the beanie gun. So we just sit back and watch the beanies get shot out and thrown out. But super fun. So, and it's kind of the beginning as we transition. You know, we kind of wrapped up our Chicago Bears partnership, but are now well into the hockey season. So this is
a
weekend.
It's the time of year.
It is. It's the time of year.
Okay.
So,
well,
there you go.
Is exciting. Do we know, do we have any contenders for the Cactus Cup yet? We don't know yet.
Yes. In fact, we do. Great question. We have the University of Massachusetts, Minnesota State University, Yale University, and St. Cloud State University.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, there you go.
I don't even know who to root for in that lineup. But
I know. Well, I mean, the fun thing about this is that we actually, even though the partnerships with Coachella Valley and the Firebirds, it brings in teams from around the country. So it's actually kind of, I'm going to say, expands our exposure to even more folks.
Which is
great.
The point.
Which is exactly
the point. All right.
Ding.
Well,
the point.
All right. Well, fantastic. That's a good thing to start the year with, and so many other sports things to look forward to.
I know. Lots of stuff going on, and you know, we're going to continue our partnership with the Coachella Valley Firebirds and continue doing extra stuff down in Palm Springs, especially now that we have the Alaska flight direct out of Santa Rosa down there.
Bring wine to the people.
Bring wine to the people.
All right, we'll be right back on today's good stuff. Thank you for joining us on today's good stuff. In studio, we have Dana Segacio, founder, CEO of Solo Nostra Wines, and Ted Segacio, founder, COO, and winemaker at Solo Nostra Wines. So essentially, you guys do everything.
Yes.
Okay.
I don't
You've
know.
Covered every got, yeah. yeah every title and every job probably there is.
Yeah, for better or worse. Yes.
Well, I mean, Solo Nostra means ours alone in Italian, and it's just us.
Well, I guess that makes it extremely clear.
We're bringing back the small mom and pop wine organization.
Oh my gosh.
Well, we love that. Thank you so much for joining us. But I want to kind of start at the beginning, which is a long time ago, Ted.
Yes.
Wait a minute.
I'm guilty of that.
I was going to say. It's okay. I don't think that sounded the way. No.
I meant you have a rich history, yes, I think is what we were going
with. We're punchy
in
the new year is what we've decided. We're very punchy in the new year. But anyway, so obviously the Sagacio name in Sonoma County is an important one, a historic one. So tell us a little bit for people that maybe don't know kind of the span of your family.
So it all began in 1886 when my great-grandfather, Eduardo, immigrated to Sonoma County specifically to work at Tyus West Colony because his best friend and chemist, Pietro Rossi, had come to America earlier and was making the wine at Tyus West Colony. And Pietro said, "Hey, Eduardo, you got to come to California, help me make the wine." So he took him 6 months to make it to Sonoma County. But he made it, and he worked for 7 years under Pietro at Tyus West Colony, which was one of the more formidable wineries of that era.
Of course.
A lot of immigrants, all immigrants, as a matter of fact. But after 7 years, Eduardo was anxious to move on, so he moved 3 miles down the road towards Geyserville and purchased what became Sagacio's home ranch in 1895, 120 acres for $50 an acre.
Okay, I was just going to ask, like, do you have any idea of the price? And yes, you do. $50 an acre,
which would have been a lot at the time.
It would have been,
That's an investment.
It was. Yeah. And then, so that's how our family beginnings started. And so we planted vineyards, built a winery in 1902 adjacent to the original vineyard. And for the next two generations, bought whenever my family had money in the bank, we bought land. Mm-hmm. And again and again and again, to where in the 1970s we had over 400 acres of vineyards and two wineries, but all the while producing bulk wine. So our two biggest clients were the Gallo family and Paul Masson. And we're Italians, so we're not always on the same page.
That's a nice way to put it.
That is a huge understatement, because my great uncle grew up during the Depression, and he just wasn't going to spend money. He, so my dad and I had to deal with that. So eventually, in the 1982, we're still making bulk wine, could hardly give it away. But Paul Masson, he said, "Hey, Sagacio, make your Zinfandel like a white wine, and we'll buy it." So we made essentially white Zin in 1982, and they bought it like that. And we hadn't been able to give away wine for about a decade. So so light bulb clearly went off in my head, and said, if we could sell those guys white Zin, maybe we should make a white Zin. So in 1983, we rolled out our first white Zin that came from the vineyard that eventually became our Cortina Zin, pretty specific. Oops. One of our top Zinfandels at Sagacio. And then for the next 6-7 years, I put white Zin in the back of my pickup, ran around the countryside, and sold it all over the place. That was when white Zin was becoming a big deal.
So what do you think it was about that moment? Why did people gravitate towards white Zin and not maybe some of the other things that you had been making or other wines had been
making?
That's
a good question. I think the quality was there. You know, a lot of the early white Zin producers were using, you know, well-established Zinfandel vineyards and sometimes old vine Zinfandel vineyards. Mm-hmm. So the quality of the product was really good. And, you know, after years, though, you know, the big producers get into the game and they make a lot of wine, especially white Zinfandel, that's not great. So eventually it took its toll. But I think the early, you know, moments of white Zin, it was really a quality made wine. Ours was great. It was bone dry and nice and pink, had good acidity, and Bueller made one. A lot of other significant wineries were making white Zin.
Yeah,
and it had its moment. It preserved a lot of old vine Zin vineyards from getting pulled out. And it's funny because white Zin was such a big deal in the '80s, and then it kind of disappeared. And now you look around, you walk into any grocery store. Mm-hmm. Or a wine shop, and there's a whole category of rosés.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so they've come back in a big way, and I think it's here to stay. I mean, you know, people like pink wine, and I don't know why, but maybe it's, why do people like pink wine, Dana?
Well, I managed to convince him to revisit his, we call it his OG roots.
Yeah.
And we actually, in 2024, we split this little Zin vineyard that we source from, And we did a white Zin, also known as Rosé of Zinfandel, in Latter Day.
They gave it a fancy name.
Yes, we did. There was a whole debate. Rebranding. We had a debate. White Zin or Rosé of Zinfandel, and clearly I won. Yeah. But yeah, no, I mean, it's just, Zin is such a palatable wine. It goes with so many different types of cuisine. And, you know, even through the holidays, it's not just a, for us, it's not just a spring and summer wine. It's really beautiful as a starter wine for holiday meals. And yeah, just really food friendly. And again, bone dry being, you know, a really big component of that. So.
Yeah, absolutely.
Can I go back a little bit though? Eduardo, so the original family, what? Like, where in Italy? What was
so
the family
So he grew up in
doing?
A small town called Doliani in the Piemonte region. And ironically, we just planted 2 acres of Dolcetto from a clone that originated from Doliani. So kind of family story there.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so it was, we made White Zin in the early 80s, sold a bulk, and then... you know, we just, it just took our family a long time to figure out how to glue a label on a bottle with our name on it. That was such a difficult concept. But finally in 1983, we rolled out our first Chenin Blanc and French Colombard, try and process those two wines. But that's what we had in the vineyards. And we followed that with a Zinfandel and a Marion's Reserve. Marion's was named after my mother, who passed away in the late 70s. And it was her dream to get a label on a bottle with our name on it. But she got sick and passed away, and kind of put our family in a tailspin for a few years. It wasn't until 1983 did we pull it all together. So, I wouldn't say we pulled it all together. We were able to bottle a wine.
So it was really, it was your generation that kind of
Yeah, it was my myself and my dad. Okay. We saw what was going on. If we waited for my great uncle to pull the trigger on spending money to modernize our facility, it never would have happened. So we, fortunately, he lived off-site at another vineyard, so he wasn't there day-to-day to see what actually was going on, because we had bought a bottling line and we were bottling wine. So we were going forward, even though the whole family wasn't in unison. But so that was the early 80s. And we struggled, you know, because we had, you know, our facility was redwood storage tanks and open-top concrete fermenters. And redwood being so abundant locally, it was the natural wood for storage tanks. And concrete vessels are great, but the ones today, they all have tops or lids on them. So we, production-wise, we were really behind the eight ball. And I didn't buy an oak barrel until 1990. First stainless tanks were in the mid-80s, so it took us a while to catch up.
Yeah.
But when the Zinfandel phenomenon hit in the late 1980s, we were ready, because we had about 200 acres of Zinfandel. And so we kind of fed the popularity of Zinfandel, which really took off in the 1990s.
Totally.
It was a big deal. And that helped propel our family brand into stability. And then at our high point, we had 13 family members working for the winery in all different capacities. And we made 12 different Zinfandels and features some really beautiful Italian varietals, one of them being Sangiovese, which my great-grandfather planted in 1910. So Sangiovese had the oldest Sangiovese vineyard, and still does. But from that little vineyard planted in 1910, we were able to propagate newer vineyards, and eventually rolled out two Sangioveses, one of them called Venom, which grew on Rattlesnake Hill. So that was my most enjoyable wine to make. I love Sangiovese.
How interesting. How did you learn the winemaking side?
Well, my mom always wanted me to be a lawyer. Sorry, Mom. But I became a winemaker. So I went to Davis. I'd already graduated from a previous college, so I was in the concurrent program at UCD, which meant as long as there was room in the class, I could get in. So I took all the classes. Didn't get a diploma, but I was coming home to work for Dad, so I didn't think I needed a diploma. So that was in the 1979 to 1983. And then when I got home, we traded with Behringer. We stored some Behringer Moscato Amabile white wine in our tanks, and they gave us a bottling line. And I think we lost on that deal, because that bottling line was a bacterial nightmare. It had trigon tubing, but we didn't care. We had a bottling line, so that's all we needed. So we finally made that thing work. We had Ray Turner, the bottling line guru, helping us, and it was, I'll never forget the first day. We spent 12 hours on the line and bottled 45 cases.
Wow.
Wow.
So, okay, but so, previously, so you know, we put a siphon hose in a barrel. Yeah. We could get 45 cases easily,
yeah,
just siphoning.
Yeah.
But anyway, we didn't care. We were so happy. That it was, well, I'll never forget the first wine was the Man's Reserve. I'll never forget that. You know, how proud we were to have our name on a bottle.
Absolutely.
That was as difficult as that was. Then we had to sell it.
Yes.
Oops, sorry. I'm
sweet. Well, yeah, the selling part. So, yeah, let's talk. We could talk about that if you want. Or
we were able to, you know, through connections and family and college friends, we were able to sign on with two significant distributors in New York and Massachusetts. You know, they're still there today, and they were powerful, and they took us under our wing. And Winebow was one of them in New York. Mm-hmm. Winebow is all over the United States now, but we kind of grew together. They were new and we were new. And Winebow really helped us propel ourselves in the 21st century.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, hi, Dana.
She has plenty to share.
We always joke, you know, Ted's been making wine as long as I've been on the planet, but I married him for his gene pool because he has centenarians in his family.
Oh, there you go.
But no, I mean, he's such a wealth of knowledge and history that we, you know, we really benefit from that, all those decades.
So, but where are you from? Did you grow up here?
I grew up in Sonoma County, but I'm Portland, Oregon born.
Okay.
So, and they're kind of both home to me, but I, you know, I moved to Sonoma County because my grandfather was a builder, and he moved down here and was an artisan crafts builder and started building house by house kind of on the west side of Santa Rosa and called my mom and dad one day and said, hey, you guys should really consider moving down here because Sonoma County is a beautiful place to raise a family. And we came down and we never left.
I love that. Yeah. Yeah. How old were you?
I was about 2.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, so,
you remember it vividly. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. No. And my mom and my stepdad still live in the house that my grandfather built.
Oh, wow.
All those years ago.
That's so neat.
Mm-hmm.
So, a rich legacy there, too.
Yeah, definitely.
And then you stayed here for school, or how did, what?
Yeah. I actually went to UC San Diego.
Okay.
I got as far away from home as possible, but still being in California.
Still where it's warm. Yeah.
San Diego's great.
Yes. So, and I'm a bit of a book nerd, so I had, you know, planned on going into some type of science, neuroscience or pediatrics, but as luck would have it, I ended up getting a degree, bachelor's in fine arts in theater and dance.
Oh wow.
So left and right brain, same time.
Yeah.
And the irony is that when I eventually moved back home after doing a stint in Los Angeles and working for an entertainment PR firm, I came home and answered, this is how long ago it was, I answered an ad in the newspaper
for a job at Segezio. That physical newspaper, like least newsprint on your...
Delivered to your home. Sometimes
imagine that.
Ripped or wet, but
So I answered an ad in the newspaper for an admin position at Segezio.
Wow.
And, you know, I walked in, and having just come from Los Angeles, I walked in a suit and heels, and it was when our offices were still double-wide trailers.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, filthy. Floor to ceiling. Farm time. But after an interview that lasted almost the entire day...
Oh, wow.
They sent me home with a 6-pack of wine, and I thought, whoa, I like this.
Good industry to be in.
Yeah. I've never had a wine industry experience. Let's do this. And, yeah, the rest is history. You know, worked there for a handful of years, and then eventually Ted got the courage to ask me out on a date at our holiday party.
Okay. Well, we have to take a quick break.
But
we'll come back and hear the rest of that story on The Good Stuff.
Back on
the Good Stuff with our guests, Dana and Ted Segacio, and we are just about to find out.
That was a teaser, and then we had to go to a break.
I know. So here's, it was a cliffhanger, and now we're back to find out, like, who shot Bobby.
Holiday party cliffhanger.
Yes.
Yeah.
Where the magic begins.
Yeah.
So, Dana, you're working at Segacio. There's a holiday party in the... Is this in the 90s? When is this?
No, I started in 2004.
Okay, so early 2000s.
This is Christmas 2007, and...
Wait, so for 3 years, had you been, like, checking each other out?
Well, she used to show up to work wearing capris. And they had laces at the bottom.
Oh,
so
dear.
She'd leave them untied on purpose so I could come and tie them. So that was our first, of flirting.
I was just going to say we call that flirting. There we go. I like it.
I mean,
but how astute for you to notice it.
Oh, totally.
Right. Well, yes. Jeff, add that to your list of cool things. Yeah, we do to get Laura's attention.
We're helping Jeff along the way. Our producer. Yes.
Okay. Tell us more.
We didn't really have much overlap, but, you know, occasionally when I needed some tech notes on wines, because I worked in sales and marketing on the wholesale division side, you know, he would bring the wine notes in, and then I would hand them back to him redlined, and it was like... pages full of red notes, which he would then have to
fix. And he took them well.
You're like,
sounds like
the wine doesn't taste like that, Ted. Don't be silly.
And I thought I could write pretty good until I handed it to her.
This is why writers matter.
Balance.
Said Virginie.
Yes, exactly.
So if you call that flirtation, then yes.
Yes. Okay. I like that. Okay.
We were kind of sitting back, and everybody was doing the white elephant game, and when you have 40 plus people playing the white elephant game, you just take yourself out, and that's one less hour that you have to worry about.
So he said,
hey, you want to grab a drink sometime? And I, nanosecond later, said, you know what, how about you just come over to my house and I'll cook you dinner?
Ooh,
so I'm thinking, yes.
She just upped the game. I'll take your drink invite and raise you a home-cooked meal.
Little did he know. True to form, I cooked him dinner, but then I proceeded to sit him down and launch into a litany of all the 10 million things that could go potentially wrong if we decided to date. Hanging over our heads, because I'm very risk management oriented and details matter. And I didn't want anybody thinking that, you know, I got anywhere because of who I was dating. And it was important to me to make sure that was clear. So after I had said all of these things that could go wrong if we decided to date, he says, yes, but there's one thing that could go right.
Ted for the win. Well done.
That's kind of us in a nutshell. And I would say that, you know, after a bit of a journey up and down, you know, that was the beginning of what has now branched into our own wine brand, Solenostro. I mean, that was where it all really began.
Mm-hmm.
So the birth of Solenostro.
I love.
All right.
And we have to thank Kenneth Rochford. I don't know if he's listening, but
Kenny,
Kenny's the one who hired me.
Oh wow!
So thank you, Kenny. We love you.
So just going back to the kind of your early days there, were you learning on the job about wine? Like, did you know a lot about wine? It sounds like you like to cook. So
I do. I mean, I've always loved to cook and bake. Science geek. You know, the irony is that my education had kind of primed me for that. You know, between the scientific side with my science background and then the arts background, you know, really the wine industry utilizes both of those modalities all the time, because I would have to be, you know, dealing with the tech notes and then being in front of people and doing wine education seminars and the art of selling wine.
Yeah, so, you're right.
It was learning on the job, kind of baptized by fire in many ways. But the great thing is that within the first few months of working there, I was given two different avenues to pursue. Ted's cousin Pete came to me and said, hey, we're going to create two positions, and we're going to let you choose which one you want. So he said, one of them is to work with me, and we'll be in the vineyards, you know, doing vineyard data, kind of managing from that aspect. And then the other one was to work under Ed Lopez, our national sales manager at the time, doing essentially running the wholesale division from the admin side and migrating into sales and marketing. And, you know, I'd been a salesperson since I was a teenager, selling at the Sonoma County Fair, you know, fair merchandise. Oh, and I'd worked at Eddie Bauer in the mall as a kid. And so it was just kind of a no-brainer.
Yeah, all
you'd been grooming
experience.
Your whole life for this moment.
I'm a soft sell kind of person. I don't want to have to hard sell anybody, and it's just about listening to people mostly.
Yeah.
So it was an easy fit, and you know, it's just the wine industry is such a magical, wonderful, beautiful place to work. You know, you're seeing the evolution of something that you grow all the way into the glass, and people get to experience all of that. And I think, you know, after I left Segezio, I had started consulting in other areas of industry, technology,
you left the company, not Ted Segezio, the man.
Right.
Yeah. Just making sure we clarify.
Not yet.
The family. Yeah, it took me a while.
Well, he is here.
I'm just saying.
And we got to give credit to his dog, Charlie, which was actually his daughter Allison's graduation present that became his dog when she moved away. But I really fell in love with Charlie first.
This is how it goes.
That dog's a chick magnet. No doubt.
There you go. There's another note for you,
very
Jeff.
True.
Get a dog.
Maybe get more.
Wait, but isn't your
get
dog
more.
Living with your mom?
Yes.
Oh, wait a minute. Wow, you just got called out.
Oh,
so your mom and your dog isn't the chick magnet, Jeff. Sorry.
I'm not on the show. This is for you guys.
Yeah, but we like it when you... The guests brought you in.
That wasn't on us. I do want to know, Dana, though, did you, like, your family, because you moved here when you were two, did your family grow up, like, growing up, was wine a part of the dinner table or the family culture at all, or not until you actually started working?
I mean, not really. My mom was a nurse, and my stepdad was a machinist, so, you know, he had his own office machine repair business back when word processors and typewriters.
Yeah.
I mean, I grew up typing on old typewriters that he would fix and repair. And so, but they ran their own business. And I think that was the most valuable lesson that I took away from that, is that I saw the hard work, I saw the dedication, I saw the long hours that they put in. And, you know, that really primed me for having a really solid work ethic. And I think, you know, my love for wine definitely grew. But I think you can't live in Sonoma County without having some semblance of an appreciation and understanding of the art of growing grapes and making wine.
Yeah,
absolutely. But I want to go back to the soft selling, because I do think, I mean, I think
there's so many places to go back to.
I know, there's so many places. I'm sorry. It's just like, because it's such a rarity in the wine industry to have, you know, kind of a larger perspective on how to talk to people about wine and how to do sort of the soft sell. So in your experience, what has resonated the most when you talk to people about wine?
You know, I think maintaining authenticity is important. Yeah. You know, having a story. Each of our wines has a very specific story behind it. It's not just, you know, oh, let's do this because it sounds fun. There are touch points along the way that are really important to not only how we identify ourselves, but also how we tie that to everything that we do. And it's something that we pass down to our children, is that, you know, if you're going to do a job, do it well, but also make sure that it's coming from a place of authenticity. And I think, especially in this day and age, you know, when people are so tied to instant gratification, whether it's an app or, you know, an email blast or a text message or whatnot, I think really being able to have a conversation with someone and make it meaningful and thoughtful, and to really appreciate the moments that we have, especially being able to share in the good times and help each other up during the bad times. I think all of those fit into how we like to approach each day.
Yeah, and that's why Sola Nostra was created, because Dana is, she won't tell you, but she went to the Sonoma State University in the executive business program and graduated top of the class because she's a self-proclaimed nerd.
I'll just take the nerds.
We love
nerds. I don't need the other stuff, just the nerds.
All right. We love nerds.
Well, we will take a quick break because we want to get into the Sola Nostra project when we come back on The Good Stuff. are back talking with Dana and Ted Segacio of Solo Nostro Wines. And
Ours Alone.
So, yeah. So, Ted, you were just about to get into kind of like how this brand started.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So, in 2018, I actually quit Segacio Family Vineyards. A move I never thought would happen, but it was time. So, I moved on. Wasn't sure if I would make wine once again. But by my side was my wife, Dana, who I've already mentioned how talented she is. Just check out our back labels, or check out all of our labels. Every wine has a different label and a different story. And that's hard to do because we make 9 or 10 wines. And to have that creativity and just to be able to pull it off is truly amazing. So Dana needed to be noticed in the wine business.
And it would be a travesty if Ted never made wine again, just for the record.
There you go. I like that.
I made a promise to his dad, and it came to fruition.
Back at you.
Yeah. I love you too.
Yeah, so we licensed.
Oh, knock it off! You guys are too cute.
I know. We don't even need to be here. We should just let them talk to each other.
I know. Seriously. All right.
Okay, so we licensed Atto Due, which is second act in 2019.
Yes.
And because our first act obviously was at Segacio, and then the so our first vintage was going to be 2020, but the wildfires took care of that vintage.
Other plans.
Of course, my good friend Cam Ortson walks up to me with a 2020 Zinfandel from Rockpile. That was incredible. Somehow it avoided the smoke taint, but we just didn't want to have to defend that vintage with the Zinfandel. So 2021 was the first vintage, and 2021 was we're in the throes of a drought, so a smaller crop. Smaller berries, the growers weren't happy, but the winemakers were happy because less is always more for us. So it was a pretty amazing vintage to roll out Solo Nostro in 2021.
Yeah. And so what was the vision, sort of? What did you want to?
Well, having purchased grapes at Segacio for over almost 40 years, I know where the good fruit is. It's all over Sonoma County. but specifically, we wanted to feature Zinfandel and Primitivo because they're fraternal twins. And, there's a lot of, we could have gone any different direction, Chardonnay, Sauvignon Blanc, Cabernet, Pinot Noir, or whatever. But we chose to make Grenache Blanc, which is a Rhone white variety, because it was contiguous to one of the vineyards that Segacio owned. So I knew the land well. And the grower was, he was quirky, but he was all over it. Because Grenache Blanc is an interesting cultivar in that it's got the thickest skins of any white grape out there. And it also got humongous clusters. But the grower let us lop off half the crop in 2021. And we have a concrete amphora, so the wine was fermented, aged in our concrete amphora. So that was our first wine, our 2021 Grenache Blanc from Dry Creek Valley. And it did really well. No oak and really bright acidity, and so that kind of helped launch our brand. But saying launching our brand and then looking at the industry as it was, we had a lot of uphill climbing to do. Mm-hmm. But we're keeping it small, 500 cases a year. So I went from crushing 3,000 ton a year to 10 ton a year.
Wow!
So I've had to recalibrate everything.
Yeah.
But that's the fun part. We can seek out small lots here and there from growers we had a relationship with. And I'm loving it.
Yeah.
I'm loving my partner.
That is clear. Yeah.
Well, the show is called The Good Stuff. So it sounds like you have the good life to go with the good stuff. So
we do. Hard work, every day is hard work.
Yeah.
And we've had to learn becoming the chief of everything, not CEO. You really, if you want to have quality control over every aspect, you got to dive in deep and you got to learn as you go. So things like compliance and all the legal and all the areas that we didn't really have our hands in before, now we do.
Mm-hmm.
And as difficult as it is, there are plenty of sleepless nights and nights where we're working late into burning the midnight oil. The fact that we do have control over every aspect is really what's most important to us at this moment, and keeping things small in an effort to maintain that quality control.
Yeah.
Okay, so we only have about a minute left. Tell people how they can come experience the wines.
come to Bacchus Landing, folks.
Yeah, okay. It's such a cool place.
It's so fun. Yeah. It's a beautiful event space, but we also have 6 boutique wineries there. We are in the co-op, so come check us out. Very excited to be there. It's just a wonderful home for a small winery like us. Mm-hmm. They have lots of events throughout the year, music all the time, and come visit us. Check out our website. Holiday hours are changing a little bit. We're open appointments anytime.
And are they likely to see one of you when they come and taste?
For the most part.
We are Sol and Ostro.
Yes. Well, okay. All right. So, yes.
As promised.
Come hear more about the holiday party. And, from.
I love that so much.
All right. Well, we want to thank you so much for joining us and telling us the story about Solo Nostro. People, go visit Bacchus Landing, solonostro.com to find out more. And thanks again for joining us on The Good
Stuff.
Thank
you for having us.
Thank you.
We appreciate it.
Things up on today's Good Stuff and Solo Nostro.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I think we should ask Jeff how he thought today's show went.
I think he loved every minute.
I think this might be his favorite
Maybe
one
there
ever.
Might have been a half minute he didn't like, but the rest of it, yes.
And when Ted came in and asked who I was, or he's like, "Are you Jeff?" And I was just like, "That's what that, yeah, it's on my birth certificate." And I was like, "Where's this going?"
Yeah. it started a little rough.
He's like, you are served.
With you not knowing. And then it ended off like on the break as we were saying goodbye. They actually invited you, your dog, and your mom to come taste the wines at Bacchus.
And so, I think you should.
So there you go.
You definitely should. At least bring one of those, if not both.
That might be the first time you got the full invite. Yeah. I'm not even sure if Virginie and I got invited. I think it was just Jeff, the dog, and mom as an option.
I promise to let this power get to my head.
Okay, that's good.
I think Jeff's now going to be on all our shows. I love it.
All right, so Solo Nostro Wines.
Yeah, and even more, we didn't get into it, but the Sagacio family, obviously with Ted and his side of the family's history, they got inducted into our Century Club last year. Mm-hmm. So, really honoring their continued, I think there's like one vineyard that's kind of maintained in the family through all the transitions. So.
Yeah. Well, going back to the times of, Pietro Rossi and Italian Swiss Colony, you've been around.
The OGs. Very, very OG, that is for sure.
Yeah, I always loved that they had, he mentioned some of the grapes that they were growing kind of before anybody else. Mm-hmm. And I like that they always had a lot of good whites as well.
Yeah.
Like, beyond white Zinfandel.
Which... thank you for that transition. Mm-hmm. You set me up very well because my Good Stuff wine, since we're at the end of our show.
Since you're ready to open it.
Is, I know, because I'm staring at it, which they brought. So I'm just going to take this right on home with me, is the Grenache Blanc from Dry Creek Valley, their Raga, which has the dog on it. I had to grab it before you got to it because I knew you would totally take this one. And so 2022 from Solo Nostro. So kind of their original wine, as they talked about doing a white, and it was the Grenache Blanc.
Yeah, I like that they're kind of mixing things up.
Yes.
I'm going to go back to sort of the Primitivo that they make.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of interesting that they're really sticking to Zinfandel and Primitivo. So they brought us a 2021 Primitivo from Rockpile, Serpente. It's going to be amazing.
Yeah, it is going to be amazing. So, very cool labels, too.
Very cool
labels.
I know
we got some photos of those, but really great labels.
Signed on the back by Ted and Dana. There's a story, individualized story in each label.
And I'm going to totally pronounce this wrong, but Ragazzone in full form translates into big boy. So I'm assuming the puppy is the reference as the big boy.
The dog looks big.
Dog.
Yes. That looks big.
I know. And cute.
And very cute. So, people should go visit Bacchus Landing in Healdsburg if you haven't been. It's 14210 Bacchus Landing Way. Easy to get to, really close to town. You can make a reservation online through their solonostro.com or through Bacchus Landing, it looks like.
Yeah, I think that's great. And it looks like free shipping offered to wine club members throughout Sonoma County. So go do a tasting and visit them and go check out all the tasting rooms at Bacchus Landing. I think that makes for a one-stop enjoyment.
And as they were mentioning, the next generation of Segesios are often in the tasting room as well, or found bouncing around the property, having a good time.
And I love that.
Kid friendly.
I love that the story continues.
Okay. Yeah. Well, solonostra.com, go visit Bacchus Landing, and from Sonoma County to wherever you are, remember to drink the good stuff.
Cheers to that.